Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
The truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network is fueled by Joy. Joy Dog Food has been in business for many decades, since the 1940s. They've never had a recall. They only use 100% American-made products to bring you a dog food formula that is going to keep your hounds on their feet and performing at a high level. Late round bound, the next bear race, the next cat race, whatever you got going, Joy can keep your dog fueled up. I personally feed Joy for this reason. They are not afraid to get in the trenches and get in the fight. They will show up at a local meeting where people are trying to pass tethering laws or breeders' bills or whatever and put their name on that and put their reputation on the line to support us. So find Joy Dog Food on the internet. Find that dealer locator. Find a dealer near you. Go to joydogfood.com and keep those hounds fueled by Joy.
Chris Saunders, who you're about to hear, is an interesting guy. For years I've sat out and in front of the clubhouse at the World Hunt in Salem and at Super Stakes and other places, and visited with Chris when I've seen him. I knew a little bit about him. You know, I knew he was hunting dogs that he raised and trained, which is, you know, not always the case out there at the events we attend. And, you know, I could tell he was a dog man. And he'd done some winning. I thought I would invite him on here. He's always a good conversationalist. But I was really surprised. I learned some stuff about Chris that I didn't know, that he was born in Brooklyn, how he started coon hunting, stuff like that. Very interesting stuff. And I want to just say that after this podcast, we recorded this podcast on Wednesday. And Wednesday night, Chris took Flex and won early, won late, moved him on to the quarterfinals. And, you know, I want to say congratulations to him, too. It was a fantastic podcast. I think you guys will enjoy it. Chris was fun. We had a good time. And I think this is what, you know, these podcasts are supposed to be. You know, we're just two guys talking dogs. And I think it turned out really well. So enjoy.
The Truth is sponsored by Havoc Hunting Supply. When you are looking for high-quality gear, go to the people that understand the demands you put on your gear. Havoc has a full line of top-quality hunting gear that meets those demands. Rugged hunting vests for the big-game houndsman to the sleek, high-speed, low-drag vests for that late-round-bound competition hunter. Havoc has what you need. The Havoc website features a complete line of hunting gear for the serious houndsman, and they feature that iconic Havoc logo. Go to HavocHuntingSupply.com and order your gear today. It's time to turn the hounds loose. It's time to wreak some havoc.
Welcome to The Truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network, and today I'm lucky enough to be joined by my friend, Mr. Chris Saunders. We are on location out at the World Hunt, and we are telling our woes of a couple cast losers right now, ain't we, Chris?
Yes, we are. Story of my life.
Let's start with this week. Chris, how's your week been so far out here at Salem?
Not too good. Got beat on the tiebreaker last night, and then Monday I lost by 50 or 25.
Yeah. You guys treat several coons in your cast?
We treat, scored on four Monday and three last night.
That ain't bad.
Yeah. Given the conditions, you know, how bone dry it is.
Well, so. Got that rain came in today. Did it rain? I've been down south all morning. Did it rain pretty good here?
It did rain. It rained pretty good earlier. We'll see how much of that moisture. I mean, it's so dry, it's just going to soak it right up.
That's what I'm afraid of, too. But We treat the fire out of coons on Monday night.
Huh.
11 coons scored in our cast. Or 10. Wow. We had another one after the hunt that didn't matter. We scored 10 coons. I treed 3 coons off to myself and got beat.
Wow. That's tough.
Yeah, that's a hard one to take. But you're hunting Flex up here.
I am.
You've had Flex for quite a while now.
He was born at my house.
I thought he was.
Yeah.
And he's a 7-year-old, right?
7 years old.
Yeah. Spring dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought him and Con came up through the same super stakes, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Tell us about Flex.
Flex is out of a female I had called Smirk. And Smirk was out of Trick. And Trick was out of Jinx. Some people might remember a dog I had called Jinx about 25 years ago. And what they are is trailing dogs that will tree a coon.
Yeah.
That, you know, good mouths, big motors, like to be by themselves. Kind of, some people might call them old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Because they'll trail. I mean, if coon aren't on the ground walking unbeat, they won't hardly tree a laid-up coon, but... They'll also treat dinosaur tracks.
Yeah. Is that the kind of dog you prefer?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know I'm hit or miss. It seems like when I'm hunting one of them trailing type dogs, that's what scent is. You know, scent needs a track.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to tree a coon without a track very often. And when she does tree a layup coon, it's the ugliest thing you've ever seen in your life. I mean, she just beats it to death before she'll find a tree on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like when I'm hunting a dog like that, and then you need them to make that one tree, you know, maybe even if it's a circle tree or something, you're tied and a circle tree will break the tiebreaker or something and you're begging for something that'll just get wooded. And then sometimes when you got stuff that'll just get wooded, you're begging for something that'll trail too much.
Yeah. I mean, and when I say they're trailing dogs, they'll make 3 trees in an hour.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 4 if coon are moving.
Yeah. If the tracks are good.
If they've walked at all, but tremendous noses, just, you know, as long as a coon is walking, and they're good enough hunting dogs, they can usually find where one is walked.
Yeah. What about their mouths? They got good mouths.
Really good mouths.
I think I drew Flex one time. Oh my goodness gracious, look who's walking in the door. It's John Strickland and Jeff Rickliffs. And they're doing all, they're making lewd gestures, whole works.
Hey, you're finally doing a podcast with a good man.
Finally, I did one with that guy right next to you.
What I just said.
Congratulations, Chris, for being selected by the chosen few. That's right.
You're in the club now, right? Yeah, Strickland says, welcome to the club, Saunders. I'm glad we didn't have them two mic'd up.
Well, it would have really been fun.
But no, we are on location at the same place. It was this time last year when I did the Big Country podcast with Ashley and Chris, or Ashley and Strickland right here in this very room. So it is... Room's getting some history, you know, as the podcast era goes.
Yeah.
We'll get back to some of them dogs. But, Chris, me and you visit, it seems like, at the World Hunt. You know, we're up there and we visit 2 or 3 years in a row. So I'm kind of happy to get you on here because we've had some good conversations in the past. But tell me how you got started doing this. Who got you into this sport?
Well, it would have been about – I actually started out with rabid dogs – a buddy I played high school football with, him and his grandfather were beagle men.
Yeah.
And so I would chase rabbits with beagles for years, not years, but throughout high school. And then my senior year in high school, a guy I worked with had some sons that had what he called coon dogs. And so we went coon hunt one night and lucked out and treated coon.
Yeah. That was a lucky deal, the tree coon.
Yeah, we was lucky we treated that one. And within 2 weeks, my dad said, you can keep a dog, but you ain't keeping a bunch of dogs.
Yeah.
My 2 beagles were gone, and I went searching. You know, I didn't have anybody. I didn't have a mentor when it came to coon dogs. So I went and bought one off the chain. And... I don't know if he did tree a coon or two, but I chased that joker for probably 9 months. And he'd rather run a fox, like back then, and we're talking early 80s.
Yeah.
He'd rather run a fox than he would tree a coon.
But that wasn't uncommon back
then.
Oh, no.
Jocks were born junky back then.
Yeah.
And I was fast enough and young enough, I could literally run to a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to run when he got treed or he'd leave. and had him for a while, and then he actually got shot. Landowner shot him, and I went and bought a pup.
What about, you said the landowner shot him, what about the ground that you were hunting out there? Because were you raised in a fairly urban area, area?
No, I was raised in an urban area. Yeah. My hunting stuff, I was actually born in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
And then we moved.
I did not know that. Yeah. I did not know that. That's cool.
I was born in Brooklyn. And we moved to Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah.
And Dayton's, you know, not a huge city, but I could be out places to hunt in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just out in the spot. And I was fine where I started. You know how that goes. Mm-hmm. But you're hunting a trashy dog, no telling where you end up.
Yeah.
Even back then. But once that dog got killed, honestly, I hate to say this, but it's probably the best thing that ever happened. Yeah. I was getting the cooner, you know, and the bloodlines. There was an ad in the book for puppies.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, I've never really hunted with a coon dog. I've just chased this English dog. He was actually supposed to be a walker dog, but he was a red tick English.
English dog.
That's how little I knew. I've chased this joker for about 10 months. And Emmett Brohard had an ad in the magazine. Now, Emmett lived in Greenville, which is about a 45, 50-minute drive. So, you know, I'm young and wound up. But I've never hunted with a coon dog before. And he had some pups advertised out of Stout's Mill Stormy. If people remember Stout's Mill Stormy. So I pull up in Emmett's house, and, you know, he's from West Virginia, man. I mean, he could sell ice to an Eskimo.
Yeah.
And I pull up in the driveway, and he says, "How you doing, young man?" You know, I introduce myself, and I'm in awe because I've seen his picture and stuff. We go hunting that night, and Stormy treed two coons so fast that I'd never seen a dog treat coon like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally trailed a coon up, and we recast him, and he didn't go 100 yards, fell tree, and had another one. So I bought a little pup off Stormy, and she was the type of dog that we hunt today.
Really?
Back then, cast lasted 3 hours.
Yeah.
We didn't have collars at all. Didn't even have beat collars. Only one time in our life did I ever turn her loose and have her come back to me. And the time that she did come back, I was so happy. I dove to catch her because I just knew I'd be, you know, another day catching her. But I caught that little female Belle, and she was a total natural. Born absolutely junky, though.
Yeah. You say that she was a born natural. So how'd you, I mean, because you said you were green as grass.
Yeah.
How'd you train that pup?
I literally trained that pup walking along through the woods, just me and her.
Yeah.
I may have shown her a caged coon or something, but she was about 7 months old. She was 6 months old when I just started. Mm-hmm. We just take a stroll, you know.
No.
And at about 6.5, 7 months old, she started treeing. I mean, she was running before then, but she wasn't running coon. And she's about 7 months old. She trees a coon. And I'm so excited, I can't wait to call Emmett the next day. I call Emmett.
Yeah.
Emmett says, "Well, come on up here, buddy. Let's, you know." And I drag her up there, and, buddy, she's 7.5 months old. And, I mean, she literally, she was a trailing dog that was a one-bark tree dog.
Yeah.
Whenever she located, she was done. Never budged an inch, and was a loner.
That was rare back then with little pups.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you'd get that sometimes. They'd be 2, 2.5 before you'd get that out a lot of times.
Back then,
back
you know,
in that area.
People think they're 16 months old before they start treeing, and that was normal.
That was a young pup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she was about 7 months old. So once I got Belle going, Emmett took me under his wing. I mean, he says, "Hey, anytime you want to go hunting, you just come on up." Well, heck, I wore the interstate out.
Yeah.
I'd go up there a couple nights a week.
How far was Emmett from you?
45, 50 minutes, maybe an hour.
What'd your dad think about you making all these trips into West Virginia chasing these dogs all night?
Now, Emmett lived in Greenville.
He's from West Virginia.
He lived in Greenville, but they didn't know what to think. But then, you know, as far as they were concerned, if I was going hunting, then I wasn't in trouble.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they I think that's a big part of why they were like, "Well, if he says he's going hunting, we know he's going hunting."
Coming from Brooklyn, I assumed your parents weren't big outdoorsmen and women.
My father, my mother and father got divorced when I was like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
He fished a little bit. He wasn't a houndsman at all.
Yeah.
And any hunting he did, which was only deer hunting, when he did it, very seldom, was more socializing than real hunting.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything I did when it came to coon hunting or squirrel hunting or turkey hunting has all been self-taught.
Right.
I didn't have anybody to. But when it came to the coon dogs, Emmett, I mean, like when he said, you come up anytime, I'd go up there 3 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was out of high school by then. I'd drive up to Emmett's and we'd hunt half the night. Emmett did not work.
Yeah.
You know, he was a salesman.
Yeah, he just hunted and sold stuff.
I would drive up there and we'd hunt half the night. And I'd wake up and leave his house and drive straight to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I hunted that dog. And then I was actually going to college at night, going to school at night. I worked during the day. And then I switched and started working at night and going to school during the day. My job transferred me up to a place called Oscoda, Michigan. So I took Bell up there. And this is back in the days when coon were worth money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could literally make good money.
Yeah.
And I took her up there, and I was poor as a church mouse. I mean, I was broke. And then had a little, tiny little place that I rented, you know. And ate a lot of squirrels and salmon because I couldn't afford to go to the grocery store. And but she kept me in money.
Yeah.
But I mean, and then I kept that female, kept Belle, and I got transferred to Savannah, Illinois. And I took Belle and drove to John Wick's house and bred the Stylish Banjo.
No kidding.
And I got those pups off of her. I sold her because money got really, really tight. But I had two pups out of that litter, both of which made something. But I'm out there in Illinois, and I'm working a dead-end job. And I thought, man, if I'm ever going to make this move. So I actually quit my job and moved back to Dayton to finish college.
Yeah.
And I knew if I had coon dogs while I was in school, that wasn't going to work.
Right.
I'd be hunting instead of studying. So I think I had about 2 years of college left. I went about 2 years, but I had a buddy that, you know, I hunted with back in around Dayton, Pat Killam. He hunts leather ear dogs, his kennel name. Me and Pat hunted a bunch together. I mean, a bunch.
What was it like going out there? Because you know how it is. And I took a break when my kids were small and I was traveling and stuff. And I didn't think I could do a hound justice. And I didn't have time when the kids were small. I wanted to be with the kids too. So I took a little break. But I would go hunting, open a night of coon season with some friends, or go with my brother if I had time or something like that. And it's just not the same when it ain't one of your dogs.
No,
out there.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. Only time I hunted then, most of them 2 years, was over the break, like the holidays.
Yeah.
Pat, he lived close by, so me and him would go. But like I said, it's not the same if you don't have your own dog. But so I finished school, and this is where Jinx comes into play. It had been 3 or 4 years, you know, and I actually called the guy that bought Belle and tried to get a pup out of her. But he said, if I could get a pup out of her, everyone she'd ever have would be sold.
Yeah.
But she hemorrhaged and he had to have her fixed. So I'm thinking, man, how do I get back into this? And I really liked the pups I had out of Stylish Banjo. Yeah. And so I'm looking around, and I see an ad for puppies. And it was a female called Stylish Thunder Girl. We called her Girly.
Mm-hmm.
And they took Girly and they bred her to Whitey, the original Whitey, Stylish Clover. And drove up to Gary Breidenbaugh's house and bought Jinx. And to this day, that's probably been close to 30 years. You know, everything in my kennel except for one dog, which I bought to breed to him, goes back to Jinx. So that's
how many generations off Jinx is Flex?
Five, I believe. Yeah, he's five deep.
Tell me about Jinx. What kind of dog was he? What'd you do with him? All that stuff. How'd he start?
he was a tough dog to get started, and that's not atypical for my dogs.
Yeah.
Take him hunting, even when he's just a little baby, 6 months old, take off and be gone, him and one other dog. Mm-hmm. His mom, as a matter of fact, she'd get treated, and he'd be over here left field 500 or 600 yards. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
And what year was that when you were starting him?
He's 7 now.
Okay.
So it would have been 15.
Yeah.
About 15. Yeah. And that started, well, he's born at 15. You know, we're talking 2016 when I started.
Well, no, I'm in Jinx. When you're starting Jinx.
Maybe 91. Nah. Yeah. Yeah, 90, 91.
And was Jinx an independent?
Yes. Born that way.
Yeah. And see, that was rare.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah. He was 6 months and 23 days old when he treated his first coon, when he made his first tree.
Yeah.
And when he made his first tree, he was in a fence row by himself, 350-something yards from the dogs that were working. But getting Flex started was pretty tough. I mean, I'd take him hunting, and he'd be over there in left field someplace, you know, running around, and his mama would be over here treating. And then I finally realized, I was like, man, I've seen this before. Trick was the same way.
Yeah.
I had Trick and Shiver at the same time. They were both out of Jinx. Shiver would tree a coon, and Trick would be way over here in left field by herself. And one night, I'm like, man, I don't know if she's ever going to make a tree.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what? I'm just going to take her by herself. First time I took her by herself, Trick trees a coon.
Really?
I'm going through the same thing with Flex. I'm like, you know what? I've seen this before. First night I take him hunting, he trees a possum. I thought, buddy, get your possum, get your coon.
Yeah.
So I don't pet up on him or nothing, but I just kind of, you know, walk in there and ease him off. And then I got a nice little greasy hole for you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I took him in that greasy hole, and he trees a coon, and that was it.
Done deal after that.
He just. But his sister's the same way.
Yeah.
She never would tree with other dogs.
What's her name?
Moxie.
Moxie, yeah. I thought I knew that, but I couldn't think of it right off hand. Was Jinx the first one you started competition hunting?
No. No, I had I hunted Bell.
Did you?
Yeah, but that back then, there were 3-hour casts when I was hunting.
Oh, yeah, you said that, yeah.
Yeah, I won. Actually, did I win? I think I may have won Black in 10 Days with her way back when. I drove from Savannah, Illinois, which is up in the northwest corner when I lived up there. And they had Black and Tan Days down here at Flora. And Black and Tan guys will remember this dog, Kirkland and Logan Zip.
Mm-hmm.
It got right down to the wire with just me and him. And I was hunting Bell. But like I said, back then, casts were 3 hours. But no, I started out hunting a gray dog in hunts. And then... made Bell a grand night champion, and made Jinx a grand night champion.
That was hard to do back then.
Yes, it was. It was.
Some first place wins just to make night champion sometimes, especially with a trailing type dog.
Yeah.
You know, you get into thick coons where a dog's going to, you know, especially with an independent dog.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard.
Because they
so they had to be good at coon tree.
Yeah. There weren't a whole lot of independent dogs back then.
Yeah.
Generally, they treat together.
What drew you to... the competition aspect of it. Have you always been a competitive guy in sports and stuff like that, and that just kind of translated over?
Yeah, I played football and wrestled in high school, so I had a competitive streak, you know. I just enjoyed it. And I've always, I shouldn't say always, there's been a few that I didn't raise and train myself, a very few. I think maybe 3 who I didn't raise and train who. And then there was one that I bought when I first got back out of college. But those are the only two that I think of off the top of my head that I actually bought. But I just like raising one up, training him, and taking him out there, and let's just compare notes.
Yeah. With your so many generations off Jinx now with the line of dogs that you're super familiar with, you know, these are your dogs. You've started a bunch of pumps off Jinx, and now you're all the way to Flex. And so you kind of got a pretty good idea, I imagine, after the first generation or two, how these dogs are going to start. Do you got like a a program? Do you just, every dog's different, or do you kind of seeing the same things on down through the line, you know, as time goes on?
You definitely see things. What I tell people is, I've said this on the cast, like, there's nothing that dog can't do that I haven't seen before. And I'm not talking about that particular whatever he's doing. What I'm saying is, I don't get any surprises.
Yeah.
Just like getting one started, I thought, I've seen that before. I know what to do. Or, you know, if they've got a little kink in them, I've seen that kink before. Yeah. I know how to deal with it. So I don't get very many surprises, which is, you know, some people don't, they don't like that type of dog. But personally, that's the kind of dog I prefer.
Yeah.
You know, I want a trailing dog. There was a guy, I won't say who it was, but we were hunting on a cast. This was with Trick in Darbydale, Ohio. And it was early March, cold, snow. And I'm hunting against a really, really good dog, well-known dog. And it's just three of us now. I mean, it's just two dogs, but this guy's walking along on the cast, and these are the type of dogs they are. When I say dinosaur tracks, I mean dinosaur tracks. She strikes this track, and it's cold and snow and crusted over in places. She trails this coon for 35 minutes, just down a creek, just barking here and there and here.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he goes, "Chris, what's that dog doing?" And about the time he said that, and this other dog is out there with her, of course, she couldn't use the trackers in, and she lets out a big old locate, and she hushes. I'm just saying, if she locates again, it's over.
Yeah.
And then she locates the second time. I said, she's about to show you what she's been doing. And we literally walk into this tree, and she's treed every breath like she's looking at it. And that dog is walking around the bottom of that tree with his nose down.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot smell this thing.
No.
And it's sitting there, in wintertime, they lay outside, they'll curl up in a ball and they'll shove their head down to kind of tuck their nose in. And I said, that's what she's been doing. That's the type of dog that I like.
And that's the type of coon that a layup dog's going to lay up. It ain't even going to run a track into that.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, but to put it up on the ground is pretty rare.
Yeah.
I mean, those dogs don't do that very often.
Nope.
And does Flex, they carry that on through the
generations? He's that type of dog. I drew a couple guys last night, and he struck a track. Now, I told you we're fighting through this Lyme disease thing with him. He struck a track last night and trailed it around. Didn't go very, very far, a couple hundred yards or so, and he was banging around. He knows that coon's right in there somewhere. And he locates a couple times. Stupid me. I probably should have went ahead and treated him quick, but I didn't, because I knew if I took a minus, I was beat. But this other dog comes in there and just locates. I had no clue that dog. I thought he was over there all by himself.
Yeah.
And we walk in there and we score this coon. I took second tree on, sitting there with my tongue in my mouth. But this guy goes, "Man, that dog did a real job on that laid up coon." And I just said, "Buddy, that wasn't a laid up coon." "Oh yeah, it was. Oh yeah, it was." I thought, "There's no sense in me, you know." I'm all right if you say, but he literally trailed that coon.
I mean,
in these dry conditions, they can get struck, and they can when they tree, generally they'll have them. There's not a lot of gamble in them.
Well, there's so many different kinds of trailing dogs, too, because there's and some people ain't going to know the difference. You know, there's the dog that's loose barking, and he's running all over the world, and he's striking a hot track, but he ain't struck, you know, this whole time. He's running his mouth, and he trees that coon. That's kind of a trailing type dog. There's dogs like Scent who are pretty tight, and she needs a track to tree a coon, but she's also skipping a lot of tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not taking that first track she trees, comes to, and grubbing it up and treeing it. She's trying to find the one that she can handle easiest, you know, and then she's treeing that coon. So it's tough in these dry conditions with her, because sometimes she's so deep before she finds the track she wants.
Right.
And I've seen her trail those colder, grubby stuff up, but she just don't want to in a cast.
Right.
She's worried about opening her mouth up too much and dogs coming to her and things like that. So she's flying around, and normally she's flying around here. Luckily, Monday night we found enough coons. I think there was 100 coons per square acre that place we turned loose, so there's at least one good track. But you talk about these dry conditions, and a dog that's going to take a track as it comes to it, you know, it's going to be rough on them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just to tree a couple coons in a cast like that is not easy.
Yeah.
And so, but also, those dogs don't make the mistakes that these hot-nosed dogs make and stuff. They don't draw the minus that those dogs can draw. They're not 2 miles away at the end of the cast where you right. can't get them treed in.
Yeah.
You know, so there's personal preference. And at least you know yours, and you can – I'm still just deciding on what I like.
Yeah, I'm pretty much set in my ways, but I'll never forget. And Jinx is the way I talked about how trailed that. Flex is just that same dog.
Right.
I mean, if I took him in, I'll tell you a story. I took Trick one night. This was back in Ohio. I wanted to see just how tough she was, how, you know, just how bad the conditions mm-hmm. she could tree a coon in. And I took her hunting. It was 7 degrees below zero. I just wanted to see.
Yeah.
And I turned her loose. And she did strike a track and trail a coon, and I saw it on the outside, 7 below. I mean, but they're just they're not picky about their tracks. They don't come across a track and go think I'll go find a better track.
Yeah.
That's if they come across that track, they're going to work it. Don't stand on their heads. I don't put up with that.
Yeah,
you know. But now I did have to get on Flex when he was younger. He was really bad at when he got confused. He'd want to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth in one spot. And the way I deal with mine is tone means come and vibrate means go.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, if he'd get in a spot and, you know, I usually hit the stopwatch and I give him about 5-6 minutes. And in 5 or 6 minutes, if they haven't moved from that area, you need to. I'm gonna send you a text message and let you know you need to. And but now at this point, after a little bit, they're smart dogs.
That's what I was gonna ask you, because they a lot of dogs bang around when they're little. Mm-hmm. You know, especially as the seasons changes or the weeds get tall in the summer or the frost first starts hitting. You know, in the fall, and as they get older, it clicks,
mm-hmm.
and you know they'll figure out what's going on, and that all goes away. Do you, I mean, you already answered my question, I guess, but you will push them some they're young.
Yeah. Well, not when they're babies.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give them up until they're about 13 or 14 months old. Because to be honest with you, that dog unraveling, if he unravels that a few times, even at 13 or 14 months old, he's smart enough to realize, okay, I can remember what I did. You know, you can watch them on the Garmin nowadays.
Yeah.
You'll see them. You can see if they're just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth in a straight line, or if they're starting to swing out. You know, they'll start making loops.
Mm-hmm.
When you see him start making those loops, then you know the wheels are turning. He's learning.
Yeah.
You know, he's learning. I can find it if I make a couple half circles, you know, within 30, 40 yards, I'll find out where, you know, so. But that back and forth in a straight line, about 5 minutes of that.
Yeah.
And I start them out when they're babies. I tell them get, you know, and I just hit that vibrate button.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, so I don't have to be close to them then.
Yeah.
I can be 500-600 yards.
I always tell people when they ask me any questions about starting pups, and it's just because of this podcast and some of the dogs that have come out of my place. And I'm not a master pup trainer or anything like that, but I always just say, if you're going to teach them anything, teach them to get, mm-hmm. teach them to come.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Everything's so much simpler they know what get means.
Yeah.
You know, and they can take any kind of, you don't have to correct them physically or with an e-collar or anything like that. If they already know what that means, if they know what you want, you know.
Yeah. If they come from my house, tone means come.
Yeah.
Vibrate means go.
Yep.
That's the basics.
Yeah, same way I do it too. You know, come means come, and we can do it with the collar, we can do it with our mouth or whatever, depending on how close I am with the dog. What'd you do before the Garmin if something like that happened? It was hard back then.
It was tough, man. You know, you just, I'm sure I've lost a little bit, but I was really, really a lot more in tune. You had to use your ears to tell you what that dog was doing. But I hunted them hard enough, and I hunt by myself 95% of the time. I knew every bark in them. I told guys on the cast one night, it was Shiver, or was it Trick? It was one of the two. She was running low down, and there was a tight woven wire fence. I'd never been in this spot before. And I'll speak out loud when I'm thinking stuff, you know. And she is driving this track. And she makes a little, that one little funny bark. And I just said, I mean, damn, I said, there's a tight fence in there, ain't it? And this guy looks over at me like, and he, you know, I'm sure there's been guys that treed on that tight fence. I said, there's a tight fence in there, ain't it? And he kind of looks over at me, you know. He don't want to fess up. But she clears that fence and she goes another 75 yards and kapow. Things like that. Yeah. I mean, I know I can tell you when they're frustrated. When they get frustrated, they can't figure out where it went.
Yeah.
Or when it's hairy because it's so, you know, they're in a briar thicket. You know, you just, you know, and the thing is, some of those same barks that Jinx had, Flex has.
Yeah.
So I don't have to relearn the whole process. I'll tell you a quick story. This is when Flex made his first tree ever, really treed. I called Chris Allen on the phone. I said, you're not going to believe this. He said, what? I said, this daggone pup, man, he's in here treed. I said, I could not tell the difference between him and Jinx. That's how much they sound alike. I mean, that close. And it's been five generations. I told them all, I couldn't tell them apart when they were 2.5 years old.
Five generations.
Yeah.
Sound exactly alike.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly alike.
I know since you've spent so much time with Jinx and obviously Flex, I bet there's just a few little things about their mouth, you know, as far as different barks they'll make, but the layman ain't. If you couldn't tell, there ain't no way none of us could tell.
Yeah, there's no way I could tell. I could not. If they treed together, I couldn't tell you which one was which.
Do you think that all these years spent with, and normally you just hunt one dog or two dogs? I mean, it ain't like you got a whole kennel full of dogs.
No, I got three dogs now. I got Flex and his littermate sister, Moxie, and then I got one little 10-month-old pup that I bought with the plan of breeding it to Flex, but I don't know if she's gonna make the team or not. Right. So
I say you're gonna be pretty picky about what you breed to Flex, I assume.
Yeah,
I mean, because guys like you or me or someone like that, we're just doing it for our pups,
right?
You know, we just want another pup out of whether it be Con or Flex or something like that. You know, so breeding that female to a hot male and selling the pups ain't
that's not what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I was just thinking as a side note. And you were talking about how this line of dogs coming off of Jinx is going to take the tracks as they come to them and finish them.
Yep.
And these big game guys that listen to this podcast are probably going to be calling you because they love that. You know, I talk to the Brett Vaughns or the Chris's or the Shorty Gorham's, and they can't have a dog that skips a track.
Right.
Because there's only one track.
Yeah.
You know, if they're running a line, you know, there's only one line track. You can't just go over the ridge and strike a different line.
Yeah, you ain't going to find another 500 yards.
So I'm going to have to put you in touch with Shorty. I'll get some good dogs out there for you.
He's never had a pup. I mean, I don't know what he'll reproduce. I can tell you, I had a guy ask me this yesterday. And it's a guy that, an older guy, he said, do you have any? Actually, two people have asked me recently if I had or froze any semen off of Jinx. And I said, no, man. I said, that's probably the biggest mistake I ever made in my coon hunting life was not getting him collected.
Yeah.
It'd be worth its weight in gold if I had some. He was a real, but I mean, he was a real reproducer, but he came from an entire litter.
Yeah.
There was five pups in that litter. And all five of those pups, well, there was one, I think, that got lost someplace or died early. But there was Jinx, Little Man, Boss Man, and I can't remember the name of the other two. There was only five of them. They were all coon dogs.
Yeah.
And they were all, and this is my opinion, they were all the same dog.
Really?
All of them.
Yeah. Them special litters like that are pretty rare. And it seems like when those litters do happen, those dogs are a lot alike. Every litter mate is a lot alike on those special litters like that.
Yeah. The few times that I think me and John, me and Bassett, he was running Little Man. We didn't draw each other very many times, fortunately, because we couldn't tell them apart.
Yeah.
So we'd get it, you know, we'd be on each other. Like, you striking Little Man. I'm not striking. That's Jinx. Well, you struck Jinx. That's not him. Yeah. But
if you guys can't tell them apart, a nobody, judge definitely
they were lost. Yeah. But this is one golden rule that I've always gone by when it comes to breeding dogs is a dog is going to produce the average of his litter.
Yeah.
He's not, you don't look at that dog to produce what he is.
Yeah.
I will always, often say, tell me about his litter mates.
Yeah.
Because if that litter is consistent, then your chances go way up of that dog being a reproducer. If he's the only one in that litter like him, chances are you're going to get what his brother or sister was.
Yep. Well, you figure, and I'm no geneticist, but I mean, I agree with you on the litter aspect. I never thought of it as, you know, a dog's going to only reproduce the average of his litter. I never thought of it in those terms.
And that's not a set rule. That's
no,
just,
but,
that's what he's going to do,
opinion. It makes perfect sense to me, but that's a rule that a lot of old houndsmen go by, you know, how good is the litter? You know, I like breeding females out of good litters, or I like having males as studs that were out of good litters.
Yep.
And so it's an interesting, I mean, Kurt has been on here. He likes dogs with good litters. A bunch of people that have been on this podcast have said the same exact thing. But the way you put it is a unique way of looking at it, and I've never looked at it like that before. It makes perfect sense.
Well, I mean, that's just one man's opinion. You know,
that's
what
the wisdom
like
of Chris Saunders. We're writing it down.
Yeah.
Writing it down right now.
You might want to erase it after a while. I ain't won a thing this week.
But, it's hard to win out here.
It is tough.
Yeah.
It is very tough.
It's not. I come out here last year with rain, and I remember I told Finley before we left, this is our best chance to win a world hunt we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Scent were both just cock-locked, ready to rock, looked as good as they've ever looked coming into a hunt. And I hunted her four nights with zero cast wins.
Wow.
You know, and it was tough. It wasn't because she looked bad.
Just not catching the break.
I didn't catch some breaks. And then there were times where other dogs just looked better than her, no matter how good she looked.
Right.
You know, and that just happens. And so, you know, people don't understand, I don't think, you know, at a lower level as compared to this, how difficult it is to win out here.
It is very, very difficult. And I'll tell you, this is just my opinion. Don't get me wrong, this is a good class of dogs that are here.
Mm-hmm.
But the caliber of dogs back in like 94 and 95 in Aurora was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just not any slouches there.
Yeah.
I mean, every single cast you drew, there was three of them there was like on your cast that was for real. Now here there might be one other one on the cast you gotta beat, maybe two, but not three other ones, you know. But it's still very, very difficult. I brought Trick, this would have been from about 90, I don't know, 94 and 96 or something. There was a 3-year span where she won 9 early rounds in 3 years.
Really?
And couldn't get a late round one.
Yeah.
And she was actually a better late round dog, more suited for a late round. Her one weakness would be she would not trail a coon. But you would think a trailing dog that can trail a dinosaur track, you know, that's a late round. That's what you want, unless especially in
Aurora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she finally did double up. I think it was her second year I brought her or something. Yeah. But it's just, like I said, man, it's tough. It is tough. You know, you get that early round win, you're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And then you go out there in the late round, it's like, dang nabbit.
Hey, I'm 0 for my last 10 in late
really?
Round. 0 for 10. I won 2 earlys down at Miami. Zones couldn't win a late round.
Gosh.
0 for my last 10.
Man, that would be tough.
With 3 different dogs, 4 different dogs.
Mm.
I mean, it's just, like you said, it's tough.
It is tough.
Law averages. Now I can't win an early this week. I can't even test if my law averages idea is going to work or not. In theory, I can't lose 11.
I brought flex last year. I think I won two earlies last year. Got beat late both times. And then this year, I got beat on the tiebreaker last night, but it's neither here nor there. But it's like, I may not win an early this year.
Yeah. You know? What about... You said back in Aurora in the 90s and the dogs were tough. How has the style of dog changed from then until now? Are they pretty similar or are they different type dogs?
Close. Probably you see a lot more man-made. You know, I could tell those ones that where they've been worked on as far as being trying to be loners. I call them, you know, they'll sell up and get a little jealous sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger, faster hunting dogs. That would be what I would say. You know, they'll drop in there. They may run 400 yards before they ever think about starting a hunt.
Yeah.
Whereas down there, well, in Aurora, that wasn't such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Unless you got lucky and got one of them few guys where you're going to drop three coon on a cast. Here in Aurora, here in Salem, that dog that wants to drop in there 800-900 before he ever starts thinking about hunting, he's in a bad spot.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. I'm going to get struck and treed before you do, and I'm going to get recast before get treed.
Yeah.
So.
What about the independent side of it? And you said you're running into a few more man-made dogs, and I do agree with that, definitely, but Garmins and stuff have got to play into that.
Yeah.
We couldn't make man-make dogs like we can right now.
No. They typically you can tell that one that's been worked on, I call it taking pictures. They'll come in around that tree.
Yeah.
40, 50 yards and, you know, pilfer around.
taking pictures out like that.
Cheerleading, taking pictures. Yeah, good job.
What you got over there? I ain't going to come in, but right, what you got over there?
I just wondering what's going on over there. I was kind of coming around to check things out, but I know the boss man is not going to be happy, you know.
Yeah.
But like I said, before the Garmin, you couldn't do anything about that.
Yeah.
But nowadays they can, you know, and then sit there and teach them what go means or send them a text message and say, get on someplace.
And I mean, it's a blessing and a curse because now you don't know, which you guys like you can tell, you know, if a dog's man-made or if it ain't. But a guy reading a stud ad can't.
Nope, he can't.
You know.
And then he gets one and it's a party animal, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, they won't. I won't say what this pup was out of, but I raised a pup here a little bit ago. And dude, you could cover whatever was on the ground she was with a blanket.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, typically whatever's at my house has been born in my house. I couldn't stand it. It drove me nuts. I just like, you know, I don't care if they're not doing anything. I want them over in left field.
Yeah.
Alone. She'd be right there with it. I mean, just shadowing it. Oh.
Every time I unsnap a young dog, a pup, 6, 7, 8 months old, when they're just getting around good enough where they can really keep up, and you watch them two deals on that Garmin.
Yeah.
Leapfrogging each other where they're just right there. And then as soon as that old dog, I hate that. I mean, I'm done immediately.
Yeah.
If you follow that dog for 600, 700 yards, and then it gets treed and you sit there and stare at it when you're 6 months old,
gosh.
They don't come out of that. That's the way that dog was born. I just sold one that was actually out of my stuff, out of a dead loner of a dad, natural dead loner. His granddad was good about being by himself. He would cover some, but it was just when he got out treed on the same track, which didn't bother me too bad. He was by himself a good majority of the time. And this pup was born the most likable dog on the planet. And everybody liked him, and he liked everybody.
Right. He's a party animal.
He was. That's exactly what he was. And a good coon dog by himself.
I mean,
you could just tree the fire out of coons with him by himself, but he was going to be with something.
Right.
And I couldn't stand it either. Guys that bought him off of him love him, and good for them.
And, you know, there's a few people I hunt with, some of them are like, I just assume he did get some of it. And all of mine, I tell people this, it's just I have my preference, but all of mine and some of yours is hard to beat on the cast.
Yeah.
Now Shiver was a all of mine and some of yours dog.
Yeah.
But she was also a some of yours only if you had a coon.
Right.
If you didn't have a coon, She'd never pull a bark.
Yep.
And she wouldn't break her neck. If she didn't have anything going on, she'd come over and check things out if she was in the area.
Yeah.
And I'd just stand there, and of course we didn't have Garmin's in, but I'd hear her locate. He's got a coon.
Yeah.
But if I didn't hear her locate, I thought, uh-oh.
I think a dog that will only cover a coon is 100 times more rare than a dead loner.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's, yeah.
Because normally if a dog's going to cover, it ain't just because it's got a coon.
Right. You're right.
You never see that, especially now.
Yeah.
You used to see it back in the day quite a bit. You know, 15, 20 years ago, you'd see a dog that would just cover a coon because they were used to packing up together a lot, right. I think, you know. But anymore, if I had a dog that would only cover coons mm-hmm. and still tree its own, who knows what you could do with it in today's age where these dogs are weirded out by being backed and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be poisoning a calf.
Yeah, she was. She was in all of mine, some of yours, dog.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to worry about it used to get me over a lot because if she went in there and never pulled a bark, then I knew, and she knew.
Yeah.
There's a coon around here someplace.
This dog missed it. I'm going to find it.
And she would find it. But then I had to worry about, what if that joker moves?
Yeah.
You know, right. she trees 40, 50 yards over there, and he slides over. If we're at a distance, then they're never the wiser.
But that'd be a handy gauge, you know. Some dog's in there treed and can beat you, and yours is in there and knows it doesn't have a coon. You don't have to worry. You don't have to take any chances or nothing like that, you know.
Yeah. She was a dog that taught me her and trick. I didn't worry about whether or not they had a coon. I worried about whether or not I could find their coon.
Right.
That's how deadly accurate those two were. They were more accurate than Jinx was even.
Do you think these dogs right now, I know these dogs right now as a whole are more accurate than they were 10 years ago probably. I don't know because everything goes through cycles. You know, when some of the bigger stud dogs and they were backing females up, and the reason a lot of these big tough stud dogs back in the late 90s, early 2000s, even mid 90s, some of them, were such big stud dogs is because all their pups treed, natural tree dogs. Mm-hmm. And everybody's wanting natural tree dogs because they are easier to start.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to listen to Flex go out here and run all night. And, you know, you can make a couple bad trees and a couple good trees and your pup's doing good and you're happy to be treeing coons.
Right.
So them guys love them dogs. You know, they love dogs like that. But I think we've kind of gotten away from that to where dogs like yours and some of the wipeout stuff and, of course, some of the trader stuff, and they are more trailing-type dogs, and I think they are more accurate. I mean, it ain't very many casts right now where a dog gets over here treed by itself, and I don't think it's got a coon.
Yeah, yeah. My thoughts are the reasons that a lot of dogs – now, don't get me wrong. There are just some natural-born wood monsters out mm-hmm. there. But the reasons that you get a lot of slick trees, true slick trees, not squirrel trees, but true slick trees, are because the dog can't figure out where the track went.
Yeah.
That's why he's treeing. He gets frustrated and finally he just throws out the anchor because he can't trail up a coon. He can't run a track, you know what I'm saying? Well, any dog can run a track, but he strikes a mediocre track in conditions like we got here, he gets frustrated and he trees. I may be wrong, but that's just my thoughts.
I don't think you are. I mean, good track dogs are more accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even a good layup dog is going to miss some.
Yeah.
Swirling wind.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of different things can affect a layup. But there's only one track up a tree if you're running one track.
Yes, sir.
So they're going to have it more often than not.
Yeah.
They also, you know, it's a double-edged sword because sometimes you need to make a tree and you need a dog to take a gamble.
Yep.
And they don't do it.
It's like sometimes I'm like, man, I wish you would please make a tree, please. You know, they ain't got no gamble in them. I won't say they don't have any gamble in them, but they don't tree just a tree and they don't tree just because they're frustrated.
Yeah.
They may miss it. Sometimes they will. All dogs will miss it. If they never miss, my philosophy is they're not making enough trees.
Yeah.
If they don't ever miss.
Yeah.
They're missing coon if they don't ever miss. They got to have a little gamble in them.
Yeah.
But there's times I wish mine had a little more.
We talked about Aurora in the mid-90s and all this stuff, and you've judged a bunch of casts too.
Yep.
You're one of the more well-known judges. You know, you've judged a lot of late rounds at the World Hunt, quarterfinal, semifinal. Have you ever judged a final?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I thought you'd judged a final. What is the absolute best performance you've ever seen in a cast?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. Gosh. Boy, I'd have to think about that one. I have a terrible memory, but the best? We'll have to come back to that one. I'm going to have to think about it. That's one of those that's like, man, give me some questions in advance. I'd have had to go back through all the cast that I've judged.
That's a lot of cast, not just judged, but handled in and all that stuff. Yeah. That's a lot to keep track of.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
What about favorite dog?
My personal favorite of mine would have been Shiver.
Yeah.
No, you know, I take that back. Trick.
Not Jinx?
Nope. Trick.
How come?
Trick was like Jinx in the way that she was just, she was going to give you, she would hunt on two legs. And you never could hunt her down. And like I tell you, I took her hunting. It was seven below. And she was, I'd pull my truck back to my pen and open her kennel up. And she was like, let's go, boss. You know, never say no kind of dog. And so she would have been my favorite. But as far as winning, Shiver.
Really?
But Shiver was very, very, very sensitive. Not sensitive, very smart, and she paid very close attention to me.
Yeah.
What I didn't realize it at the time. I do know it now that if I was nervous, she was nervous. Mm-hmm. She never wanted to be in trouble with me.
Yeah.
Trick didn't care. Jinx was that way. Flex is that way. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care what kind of mood I'm in. Yeah. But Shiver did.
Yeah.
So, and that, you know, when you get down to the, I think it was at the Nationals, and we were a heads-up cast, and I was just as nervous as could be. And she knew I was nervous, and that made her nervous. So, Trick would be. But I'm a female guy.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that. That was going to be one of my next questions, because you've had good males too.
Yeah, I've only had a couple, Jinx and Flex.
Yeah.
I can't think, well, I had who, but I bought him. But other than that, I want females. Because my philosophy is, if I own a female, I control my own destiny.
Yeah.
People say, oh man, females that come in heat, you know, every 6 months or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I was like, okay. I was like, but you know something? A male's in heat 365 days a year.
Females don't have near as much to deal with in a cast.
Nope.
They just don't.
And I control my own destiny with a female.
Yeah.
If I hunt against a dog and I'm like, that joker impressed me.
Yeah.
Then I'll say, hey, bud, what's that dog out of? You know anything about his litter mates? Yeah. What would you think about breeding that dog?
Yeah.
You know, and then some guys say, well, I don't want to breed him. No problem. How about we go hunting and I'll bring over and we'll go hunting?
Yeah. That usually changed your mind.
Yeah. I didn't.
I don't know very many guys with a male dog that won't want to breed a good quality female, even when they don't want to breed a female.
Right, right. You know? And you know, they don't have to live breed them. They don't have to cover them. We can take them to the vet and have them collected and do AI, if that's what you're thinking. But, yeah, I prefer females. But my favorite would have been Trick.
You said that Flex and Jinx and all them didn't care. They weren't as sensitive as Shiver, you know.
But right.
I'm guessing the houndsman that you are, these are dogs that weren't dumb.
No.
You know, they just had a little something different in there mentally as far as not caring as much about what you were thinking. Because, I mean, when we associate dogs with all the drive, you know, a lot of it, because it's hard to get drive and intelligence in the same dog.
Right.
We all look for that. But, you know, aggravating dogs are dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and dumb dogs got drive too, just like a lot of them, and you can't really take it out of them because they're dumb.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But we also got to live with these things.
Yeah.
So I know, I'm guessing Flex, Jinx, all these dogs with all that drive still had brains too.
Yeah. Very, very, very smart. Very smart.
Yeah.
Sometimes too smart.
Yep.
So you got to, when you go to correcting one, you need to think about what you're doing before you do it, because chances are it's going to stick with them.
Yeah.
So if you make a bad correction, you may spend a month fixing that problem that you didn't have because they're thinking about it the next time.
We've all done that too. I mean, it's such a common mistake.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. It's just, you know, when it comes to teaching one or correction, I tell people, you know, you can teach a dog a lot of things, but you can only teach him one thing at a time.
Yeah.
You go to, if you make three corrections in a night of hunting for three different things, that dog is confused.
Yeah.
If you're going to make three corrections, two out of the three, preferably three out of three, better be for the same thing on that night.
Yeah.
Instead of three different things, because if he's a smart dog, he's thinking about that correction, but he's like, well, what, you know, everything I do is wrong.
Yeah.
So.
And then I know with Con, who was so fast, everything was so fast. You know, he went from being a baby pup and running around the yard to all of a sudden, I think this dog's going to win Super Stakes, you know, in like a month.
Right.
Well, then you get to treating them that way. You know, when they're 10, 11, 12 months old and they've already got, you know, 150 coons under their belt, and you start treating them like that five-year-old.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've just about train wrecked him, and to the point he is not going to be back in a cast. He's still a really good coon dog. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll ever get him back in a cast again, but that was all me. That's my fault, you know. And so you live and you learn. And
gotta let them be pups. You know, when she was young, and she was an early starter that was, I could see, man, she's special.
Yeah.
And buddy of mine said, man, are you going to take her to the Super Stakes? I said, nope. He said, why not? I said, what am I going to do, take her to the Super Stakes? Of course, didn't pay a whole lot then. I said, I mean, this one's got potential.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I risk ruining this thing for that could be, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, a stone cold killer to try and win the Super Stakes. I was like, I'd just soon polish her up, get her another year under her belt, let her settle in a little bit before I get her all head all rattled. And so I didn't. And I believe, honestly, that's ruined a lot of the young dogs.
Yeah.
Guys just push them so hard when they're babies. Hey, man, just let them grow up, you know.
Them dogs that seem finished as a one-year-old aren't finished mentally.
No.
They've got all the tools, and, yeah, they're doing the same things a lot of good 4 and 5-year-olds are doing, but they ain't finished mentally.
Not even close.
No. And, I mean, I look at some of these dogs that win long-term, and I've struggled winning long-term with the same dog. I make mistakes. I'll burn them out. Jed does the same thing. I mean, we run through dogs like, you know, toilet paper sometimes at a Taco Bell. it's bad.
Yeah.
So we gotta get some longevity out of them. And the females, that's back to my original point. The females, we don't have that trouble.
Yeah.
You know, the females seem like they got less to deal with on top of us.
Yeah.
You know, the males got to deal with all their testosterone and all their hormones, and they're going to be fighting, and most of these dogs are dead loners, and they don't want nothing coming in with them, and they're dealing with that. And, you know, it's just
those male dogs, they come out of the box looking around and see who's there.
Yeah.
You know, what's this one? What's that one? A female comes out of the box, she doesn't care.
No.
She couldn't care less. Tail,
happy, just regular, you know, coon.
She's on a mission. That male dog in the back of his mind, he's thinking, okay, so I don't like the looks of him, and you know, this one here, he wants to come over here, and he's gonna piss on that bush. Yeah. So I'm gonna piss. The female's like, I'm not worried about you guys.
You watch a bunch of girls at a bachelor party go into a bar, and then watch the guys walk into a bar. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But well, Chris, man, I appreciate you sitting down with me.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was.
You
fun.
Said it would be fun. I was
told
like,
you.
Man, I don't. You said, oh, it'd be fun.
Yeah. I think me and you have visited enough. I figured this one was going to go pretty smooth, you know. So, yeah. And it did.
Yeah.
I think it went really well. I picked up a lot.
Well,
and you always got to be humble in this.
Yeah.
You know, you always got to learn. Even, I mean, I learned from guys like Kurt. Kurt said things to me, and I've known Kurt since I was 16 years old. And he said things to me during this podcast, and I'm over there nodding my head. I'm thinking, why didn't he tell me this 20 years ago?
Right.
This makes sense, you know.
I could have saved myself a whole lot of heartache.
I could have used that. And so, but no, I really appreciate you sitting down. We'll do it again sometime.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got other stuff to add, believe me. Well, one thing I wanted to say is
say whatever you need.
And a lot of guys won't remember Emmett Brohart, but man, that dude treated me like a son.
Yeah.
He really took me under his wing. I mean, of course, he was the first, he owned the first real coon dog that I hunted with. But I'll tell you a quick Emmett story.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a dandy, Emmett was. Yeah. You had to know him, but, you know, he had the mule chaps and some other stuff. But he was a salesman. Now, don't get me wrong. He's what I call West Virginia hustler. But he drug me around to these hunts, you know. I'm just walking along on cast with him. And, you know, I'm all gung-ho. I want, you know, he says, Chris, he says, you know, you've been walking along on these casts with me, and I hadn't been on very many, probably half a dozen or so. He says, the only way you're going to learn this thing is to do it yourself. I didn't have a dog. I had Belle, but she was 10, 11 months old. And we went over to Indiana. He says, there was some great big, well, it was all UKC then. But he says, because we're going to go to this hunt this night, you know. I'm not thinking anything of it. We're going to go to this hunt, Chris. He says, one way you're going to learn about these casts is do it. He says, so tonight, you're going to hunt Bo. I said, Bo? And he had a doggy called I-79 Bo. Now, you got to realize, I've never hunted any cast before. And Bo is a Grand Night champion. So, you know, and back then, that was a big deal.
That was the big trophy.
Now, the names I'm about to tell you, some of these young guys may not remember, but a lot of guys will. This was the cast of dogs that my first ever cast, 3-hour cast. Russ Beller hunting Kentucky River Buck. Charlie Shortridge hunting Shortridge's Queen was a plot dog. Yeah. And Nathan Hammonds hunting Lookout Luke. That was the very first cast I ever hunted on. And man, Emmett, he just laughs.
Hey, if a dog's going to pick up nerves, I bet the dog was picking it up on that man. Cat.
Dude, I was beat before I left the clubhouse, man. But he laughed. He said, oh, he goes. He says, yep. He says, you're going to get an education tonight. That's what Emmett told me. And he was right. I did. But, you know, I was sprung then, man. I went on that cast. And, of course, I didn't win. But I did learn a little bit. So, but that's a good one to close on. But I didn't want to do this without giving Emmett his due, man.
Well, there's an important lesson there, Chris, because everyone – need someone to take them under their wing in this.
Yep.
You know, here's a kid from Brooklyn that moves out to Ohio and picks up coon dogs, and he's got a mentor like that, and that's why. I mean, that's why we need to make sure and pass this on to somebody.
Yeah.
Or it's not going to be around no more.
That's right.
You know, we want more Chris Saunders. We want more kids from Brooklyn to come out here and buy them a hound dog, you know, and do stuff like that, and they can't do it without some help.
Yeah, it'll save a whole lot. It's a lot easier. You get a lot less discouraged if you got somebody to kind of take you under the wing versus going cold like I did. Yeah. But, you know, I should say go cold because once I got Bell, you know, and met Emmett, well, then I was off to the races.
Yeah, so. And some kids are like you and are just going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, they see it and they love it and they're going to do it.
They'll spend 9 months chasing an English dog and once they treat for 5 minutes.
Treat two coons in a year.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, let's go get these dogs entered up.
All right, man.
I appreciate it, buddy.
I enjoyed it.
All right. This is Josh Michaelis with The Truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network, and we appreciate you listening.